know, it seems that every year a new book or a television special goes looking for the so-called historical Jesus. And what's the result? A picture of Jesus that is far from the awe-inspiring, powerful person that John MacArthur will show you next on Grace to You. He didn't come as a political leader. He never led an army into battle or gained international fame. Yet, across the spectrum of history, no one has wielded as much influence. He was, and still is, the most powerful person to walk the earth. Certainly, I'm talking about Jesus Christ, and while you may know that his influence is unmatched, did you understand that his power is still cause for trembling fear, humble worship, joyful praise? We'll consider that today on Grace to You as John MacArthur looks at the amazing power of Jesus. That's the title of John's current study, one that might just change how you view him and that could forever transform your life. And now taking us to Matthew chapter 8, here's John MacArthur.
A horrible disease found its way into the children of Israel's life. This disease, leprosy, as it's called in the Bible, was no doubt picked up in Egypt. Most of the classic writers feel that leprosy originated in Egypt. And by the way, it is caused, they now know in medical science, by a bacillus or a bacteria called Mycobacterium leprae. This disease then, of course, as the children of Israel were in the land of Egypt, was transmitted to them. And when they came into the promised land, they carried this disease with them. This disease was feared, horrifying. And whether or not it could attack the total population or only a few, it was enough to want them to be out of the camp, just to protect the people. They have to go out of the camp. In 2 Samuel 3:29, there's an amazing statement. David was pronouncing a curse on evil Joab, and David said, "May his family never be without a leper." That is the worst thing you could say about someone. And the disease had no cure. But you know what was even beyond that? Unbelievable. It wasn't bad enough to be ugly. Beyond all imagination. To add to that, they were classified as ceremonially unclean. And God had a purpose. Leprosy, mark this, was the most graphic illustration of sin available to God. Sin defiles the whole body. Sin is ugly. Sin is loathsome. Sin is incurable. Sin is contaminating. Sin separates and alienates and makes outcasts of men. So every leper not only lived with the stigma of his own disease, but he lived with having to be a walking illustration of sin. Ceremonially unclean. Wretched. Isn't it shocking that Jesus, presenting the credentials of his messiahship, begins with such a man and ignores all the sick Pharisees in town? Let's look at him. Verse 2. Boy, I get wound up on these things. A leper came. Lepers don't approach. That's forbidden. That was unthinkable. Personal shame. I mean, you wouldn't be seen. Social stigma. Old Testament law. The ceremony. You just didn't do that. You just went around covered, mumbling, unclean, 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 so no one would come near. This is incredible. Four things stand out about this leper. Number one, he came with confidence. And behold, there came a leper. I like that. He didn't crawl or sneak around. Psst, psst. Just came. And the verb in the Greek is good. He approached. Comes right up. I can imagine that crowd split fast. Right up there. You know what I see in this? I see a man who senses so desperately his need that he really couldn't care less what anybody thinks, right? I like that. You see, people like him would be so devastated socially that they wouldn't show up in a crowd. This one did. He lost all sense of shame. He lost all sense of social stigma. He approached. He didn't even think of it. That's how deep his need was. Josephus tells us that lepers were treated like dead men. That wasn't going to stop him. He may have been dead in everybody's eyes, but he came. He came because he saw he had a very deep need. And he wanted help more than he wanted to save his reputation. File that somewhere, will you? Second thing, he came with reverence. Oh, I love this. There came a leper and worshiped him, saying, Lord. Oh, we can't say much about his body, but we can say a lot about his soul, can't we? There were the Pharisees all decked out, all their fancy garb, fancy robes, their little hat they wore, the beard trimmed to a T. Inside, wretched, rotten, dead men's bones. Here was a leper. Outside, vile and wretched and filthy, and on the inside, beautiful, reverent, worshiping. You know what I believe? I believe when he said Lord, he wasn't using it in the title sense of sir. I believe he knew he was in the presence of God. Else why would he have worshiped? Proskuneo, fallen prostrate. Here he comes up to Jesus, falls prostrate before Jesus, and says, Lord, I don't know where he got his information, but there'd been enough going on in his area to know. There had been healings upon healings upon healings. Maybe one of his friends had been healed. But he comes and he worships, and men prostrate themselves before kings and before God. I believe he came because he had a worshiping heart. I believe he was in the presence of God and he knew it. And it was wonderful to see that his soul was turned toward God and he came to worship first. That's because he understood the soul was more important than the body. He came worshiping. He came exalting God. Before he sought anything for himself, he sought something for God. File that somewhere, will you? That's another important thing. Third, he came with humility. Don't you like this? He says, Lord, if thou wilt, if you will, that's humility. He didn't demand anything. He didn't speak his will as if Christ had to comply. He didn't come and list the reasons why he had to be healed. He didn't come and try to affirm his own worthiness. He didn't bellyache because of the fact that he got this disease and a lot of other folks didn't. He didn't talk about his rights. He didn't even talk about his desires. He didn't even say, I'd like to be healed. He didn't even say that. He only said, if you wanted, you could. I'm not saying myself what you ought to do because you're the Lord. Don't you like that? A far cry from the stuff you hear today where people are told to demand healing out of God, to demand wholeness, to claim their healing. This man had no such thing to claim. He worshiped first, never asked for anything, just said, I know you could if you wanted to. I guess I agree with Lenski that the leper is willing, if Jesus shall so will, to remain in his living death. I guess I believe that he would have gone away still believing if he was a leper, or he wouldn't have worshiped first. And he wouldn't have left out any request on his own behalf. It manifests a pure heart. Finally, he came with faith. If thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. Dunasai, dunamai, dunamis, power. That's the word in the Greek. You have the power. You are able. I know that. I am convinced of that. And by the way, Luke tells us, and Luke always gives us the clinical analysis of everything because he was the doctor. He says he was full of leprosy. And he said, you can do it. Where did he get that information? Hey, maybe he was around in Matthew 4 and saw it all going on. You can do it. Beloved, when a man says, if you will, you can do it, that is faith at its highest point, because it knows that God is able and it submits to God's sovereignty. There are lots of people who believe, they say they believe he's able, but they want to corner him that he has to do things. There are other people who question whether he can. But true faith says, I know you can. I don't know if you will. That's the highest level of faith. But whatever, that's your choice. So he came with confidence because he had a deep need, with reverence because he saw God, with humility because he realized that God was sovereign, and with faith he knew he could do it. What happened? Verse 3. And Jesus, watch this, put forth his hand and touched him. Now, that's all it says in this text, but it could be added, and the whole crowd gasped. You don't touch lepers, folks. Leviticus 5:3 says, you are never permitted to touch the uncleanness of a man. But you know what a leper probably needed more than anything in the whole wide world? Just to be touched by somebody who was clean. Touched. He didn't have to touch him. He could have gotten on a roof and said, be clean! And the angels sang and the earth shook and thundered. No big dramatics. I love that. I love the simplicity. Just some very simple. One of the greatest proofs of the inspiration of the Bible is the lack of comment by the Bible writers. I mean, if I had seen this, I'd have gone on for 18 pages. And then the finger began to do, there's a lack of that. One of the great proofs of inspiration is the absence of that. Because men would make big deals out of it. No, just touched him. Said, I will. It's my will. Be clean. And immediately the leprosy was cleansed. Immediately. All Jesus' miracles were immediate. It bothers me when people say, well, I went to the healer and I was healed, and ever since then I've been progressively getting better. That's not healing. Jesus put forth his hand and touched him. You know, when we touch defilement, we get defiled. When he touches defilement, the defilement goes away. When we touch a disease, we get contaminated. When he touches a disease, it gets cleansed. That's power. I mean, I don't know what that scene was like, but I can imagine those shriveled up claws instantly becoming beautiful hands as if the skin of a baby. The feet, the face, incredible. When Jesus touched him, he was clean. Immediately, his power, shocking, the forehead eaten away, the eyes with their absent brows and lashes, the scaly, bloody skin rubbed off, the nose and throat and eyes destroyed, and the fingers and toes like claws and worn off, and instantly he's whole. You know, I just say to myself, all the modern so-called healing fades into absolute nothingness in comparison with that kind of an omnipotent display. You can line up all the so-called healers in the world, and they can pick out any leper they want. And they're not going to do this. Let the so-called healers be silent. Their claims are folly in comparison to the power of Christ. So foolish when you read about the all around the world. Every civilization has its supposed healers. Not like this. They don't create fingers. They don't create feet. He did. Immediately. Verse 4, watch this. And Jesus said unto him, see thou tell no man. Don't say a word about this to anybody. Oh, my heart. That is painful. To nobody, but go your way and show yourself to the, literally use the word for temple, to the priests in the temple, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. What is the first test when Christ has invaded your life? One little word, starts with O. Obedience. He says, all right, you've been healed. Now do this. Two things. Number one, do what Moses said to do. Keep the law of God. And Moses in the Old Testament had an amazing thing. When a leper was cleansed, he had to go to the temple. And I mean, it was amazing. Just to give you an illustration of it, I'll run through it very rapidly. Leviticus 14. Here's what happens. The guy believes his leprosy has been dealt with. All right? In the event that this happened, and as I say, there may have been isolated cases when there was a healing. First of all, you had to take two birds, and you had to kill one of them over running water. In addition, they take cedar, scarlet, and hyssop. You take them with the living bird, dip it in the blood of the dead bird, and then send the living bird to fly away. It's a picture of resurrection. Then you wash yourself and your clothes, shave yourself, 7 days allowed to pass, and you're reexamined. Then shave your hair, your head, and your eyebrows. Sacrifices are then made consisting of two male lambs without blemish, one ewe lamb, 3/10 of a measure of fine flour mingled with oil, one other measure of oil. Then you had to touch all the stuff on the tip of your right ear, right thumb, right big toe, mixed with blood. And then the final examination, and if the cure was real, you were given a certificate for your wall. Ex-leper lives here. Well, that's what he wanted to do, is fulfill Leviticus 14 and go take care of all that. You say, well, I can understand that. He wanted him to obey. See, Jesus didn't come to destroy the law, but to what? Fulfill the law. And while he was devastating the system of the Pharisees, he didn't want them to think for a moment that he was violating God's word. Now you say, well, what did he tell him not to tell anybody for? Think about it. Some people say, well, he didn't want to stir up a crowd following him just as a miracle worker. And that's very possible, because it became difficult for him to function, didn't it, soon after this, because the crowds were so great he had to get away. Others say, well, it's really because Jesus didn't want the people to see him as a power who could throw off Rome and look at him as a political leader like they did, remember, in John when they tried to make him a king to overthrow Rome. And others say because this was the time of his humiliation and he didn't seek exaltation. And there may be truth in all of those, but let me tell you the best reason. If you read the rest, see thou tell no man. Just read the rest and you'll know why. But go your way and show yourself to the priests. Why? Here's the whole issue. You go down to the temple and you go through this whole Mosaic thing. You got an 8-day examination. Offer yourself with your friends as a leper who's been cleansed. Let them go through the whole shooting match testing you. And when they're all done, they're going to conclude this leper is cleansed. And then you may say, would you like to know who did this? Jesus of Nazareth did this. And then they are trapped in their own conclusions. See? Pretty powerful. The priests will confirm that he's clean, and they'll discover it was Jesus. And by their own testimony and their own examination, they will confirm the power of Christ. And it all hinges on the fact that he hurried to Jerusalem and didn't spread it around, or the word would get there first that Jesus did it, and then they wouldn't be interested in examining him. Well, you know what happened? The guy didn't do that. He shot off his mouth everywhere. Mark tells us that. He just got so excited that he failed to obey. And so the story in that sense, kind of sad that he didn't do what he was told. I want you to think about this. Jesus said, which is more difficult, to heal disease or forgive sin? He said that a couple of times in different words. You know why? Because all the while that he was doing these kinds of miracles, he was not only revealing his power over disease, but every one of them was an illustration of his power over what else? Sin. Sin. And I see in this an analogy. This text to me is analogous to a conversion. Follow this thought in conclusion. Leprosy, ceremonial unclean, demonstration of sin. It's just like sin. Sin is pervasive. Sin is ugly. Sin is loathsome. Sin is communicable. Sin is incurable. Sin makes you an outcast. But the leper came with confidence. Why? Because he got desperate enough over his leprosy, right? That's how conversion happens. People don't get saved unless they get desperate over the loathsomeness of the disease of sin. And beloved, that is so missing in the evangelism of our time. The man came, he lost all the social stigma. He lost all of the fear of being ostracized. He didn't care about that anymore. He was overwhelmed with the loathsomeness of his disease. Coming to Christ is not getting on the bandwagon. It's being wretched and knowing it. Secondly, he came worshiping. I believe that true conversion occurs when desperate people come worshiping God, not seeking things for themselves, but seeking God's glory, a recognition of His majesty, a sense of awe, lordship, Lord, he says. It's up to you. I think true salvation demands that kind of wretchedness and that kind of affirmation in reverence of worshiping Him as Lord. Thirdly, He came humbly. I think true salvation doesn't take the perspective of you doing God a favor. There's no self-will, no self-centeredness, no sense of worthiness, no sense of value, no rights, no claims, no nothing. It's the meek who inherit the kingdom. Finally, He came with faith. He believed He could do it. And you can't be saved without faith. There must be an overwhelming wretchedness in sin. There must be a worship of the lordship of Christ. There must be humility and faith. And you'll be touched and cleansed when you come on those terms. And may I say that the disease of sin is infinitely worse than the disease of leprosy? And then when you're saved, you know what the Lord says? Do two things, will you? Number one, will you obey the law of God? Will you obey the law of God? And number two, let people discover for themselves that Christ changed your life. So it's not just verbal. Isn't that an interesting thing, that analogy? It's better for you to say nothing and let the world see that Jesus changed your life by their own examination than for you to shoot off your mouth and not be able to support it with the way you live. Here was a guy running around, Jesus changed my life. Boy, look at me, I used to be a leper. And somebody's going to say to him, hey, why aren't you down and showing yourself to the priest? I'm going to get to that. A disobedient life in the midst of a testimony is meaningless. The testimony is rendered invalid. Be obedient. And in the midst of your obedience, God will manifest out of that the transforming power of Christ. It's your life that speaks. And so we see in this lovely story the healing of the soul from sin in an analogy.
Staggering to think that if we simply submit to Jesus' divine authority and obey Him, He promises to heal us spiritually. John MacArthur described that glorious truth today on Grace to You as he's continued the study called The Amazing Power of Jesus. John, there at the end you talked about obedience. Of course, no one has ever been more obedient than the Lord Himself. I think that's something we tend to forget, that even though Jesus was God, He still was obedient, perfectly obedient.
Well, He was perfectly obedient in every sense. He did everything that the Old Testament asked the people of God to do morally and even ceremonially. He was perfectly obedient. In fact, the book of Hebrews says He was holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners. And it was God, His Father, who said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am fully pleased." In fact, He lived one perfect life, the only perfect life. That, by the way, is the title for a very fascinating new book called One Perfect Life. Let me tell you a little bit about it. Through 25 years of teaching in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that's right, I spent 25 years in those books, I have been amazed and astounded and blessed and encouraged and instructed and led to worship by studying every detail in the life of Christ. In the process of preaching through those four Gospels, I always blended in parallel accounts from the other Gospels. In other words, if there was an incident in Matthew that Mark also wrote about or Luke wrote about, I showed how Luke's account or Mark's account blended, fit perfectly. And I did that with every book repeatedly so that I came to have a full understanding of the whole story of Jesus from all four Gospels blended into one story, blended into one narrative. And there is nothing more glorious or compelling than the full story of Jesus Christ. So I want to tell you about this book, One Perfect Life. It is a blended harmony of the Gospels. It tells the full story from all four Gospels in one narrative account, word for word for word. You see the perfection of all four Gospels and how they fit together. Also, selected notes from the MacArthur Study Bible are at the bottom of the page to explain some things. It's a brand new hardcover, One Perfect Life, nearly 500 pages. I promise you'll read the story of Christ like you've never read it before. It's available now from Grace to You.
You've never read a narrative of Jesus quite like this. To order John's new book, his one-volume comprehensive account of the life of Jesus Christ titled One Perfect Life, give us a call or go online today. The toll-free number here is 1-800-55-GRACE and the web address gty.org. One Perfect Life costs $15. Shipping is free. This is a great book for personal devotions, also the kind of book that can give an unbeliever the full, sweeping, and saving vision of Jesus Christ. Again, to order John's brand new book, One Perfect Life, call 1-800-55-GRACE or go to the website gty.org. Of course, if you'd like to purchase any of the resources available from Grace to You, perhaps one of John's New Testament commentaries, another book by John, the MacArthur Study Bible, a devotional, or a CD album, you'll find a complete selection of many Bible study tools at gty.org. Thank you, too, for remembering that Grace to You is listener-supported. If God is using this ministry to deepen your love for Him and His Word, you can play a part in keeping us on the air and available to you and others in your area and those around the globe. Express your support when you write Grace to You, Box 4000, Panorama City, California, 91412. Or when you call 1-800-55-GRACE. For John MacArthur and the entire staff, I'm your host, Carl Miller, inviting you back tomorrow for another 30 minutes of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, here on Grace to You. It may be 2,000 years since Jesus Christ walked the earth and demonstrated His power, but that doesn't mean that His power isn't just as life-changing today. That's what we consider on tomorrow's Grace to You.